British Sky Broadcasting presents The Curse of the Werewolf, starring Clifford Evans as Don Alfredo Corleto, Oliver Reed as Leon Corleto, Yvonne Romain as the jailer's daughter, and Catherine Feller as Christina Fernando. The film's directed by Terence Fisher and voiced by Stephen O'Neill on behalf of MCS Agency. During the opening titles, there is a close-up on the bloodshot, hungry eyes of a werewolf who's looking from side to side. Tears are dripping down his cheeks. Spain, a rustic town square overlooked by a bell tower.
Some 200 years ago, a beggar came to the little town of Santa Vera in search of charity. Although a simple man, he was not so simple that he did not know when it was a weekday and when it was Sunday. And although the church bell was sounding and all the little shops were closed and there was no one in the square, he knew this was not a Sunday.
Senor.
The beggar takes off his black hat.
Forgive a poor ignorant beggar, senor, but today is not Sunday. They're ringing the bells and there's no one in the street.
Can't you read?
The townsman walks away.
No, senor.
The beggar is a gaunt man with dark hair and a dirty face. He puts on his hat and starts to trudge away. He carries a cloth bag with a floral design over his shoulder, and he wears a long brown cloak. Another townsman heads under an arch and into a doorway. The beggar follows him. Inside, an 18th century pub, men in waistcoats and breeches sit round little tables. One of the men passes a couple of goblets to the landlord at the bar. The landlord, with dark hair and a moustache, pours wine from a large clay bottle. The beggar enters the bar and approaches him.
Senor, today is not Sunday.
I'm aware of that.
There's no one in the street.
I'm aware of that, too.
And the church bells ring. And you want to know why, is that it?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you why. Today is our holiday, our public holiday, a day of rejoicing. And we're all rejoicing today, aren't we, senores? You know why we're rejoicing? Because our beloved Marquis is getting married today. And we have to rejoice. By order. And we'll get me a drink.
The gruff man sits down.
Isn't that a good thing?
And who'll have to pay for this wedding? We shall. And who's paid for the bride, poor child? We have.
Yeah.
And who's paying for that feast that's going on at this very moment up at the castle? We are.
The landlord brings a drink and turns to the beggar.
I haven't seen you here before. What are you, a beggar?
Yes, senor. If from the deep charity of your good heart...
We have nothing to spare, my friend. That's where all our charity has gone. Yeah. You want some of it, you'd better go there. And God knows I wish you luck.
The beggar turns with a look of confusion and walks away.
The beggar took the man at his word and climbed the long road to the castle, where, as he had been told, the Marquis was celebrating his wedding day with a feast.
The Marquis, with a grey ponytailed wig and a silver jacket, gestures to a man in the centre of the banqueting room who turns and bangs his long stick on the floor towards the minstrels. A procession of food is brought into the room on silver platters carried by young boys, each platter accompanied by a chef. One by one, they stop in front of the Marquis and his attractive blonde wife and bow. The new wife, wearing a light blue dress, grins as each of the pairs bows in turn at their table. To the sides of the room are two long tables, at each of which many noblemen are sitting, each in elaborate 18th century jackets and neckerchiefs with grey ponytailed wigs on their heads. At the back of the procession, two boys carry in a goose, which still has its feathered wings and head attached, posed as if about to take flight. They stop in front of the main table. The young wife looks uneasy. The Marquise glances at her.
Stop!
What's the matter, my dear?
It looks so...
Don't you like goose?
Why have you prepared goose when the Marquise doesn't like goose?
My lord, I didn't know.
Why didn't you know?
The Marquise rises from his seat.
Why didn't you know?
Have mercy, my lord.
The Marquise approaches the boys carrying the platter. He picks up the platter and throws it to the ground disdainfully. The noblemen peer at it. It lies on the marble floor in bits.
Pick it up.
The Marquise glares at the chef, who nervously crouches down over his creation. The Marquise strides towards him and shoves him onto the floor. As the noblemen laugh, the chef on his hands and knees tries to clear up the debris. Nighttime. The beggar approaches the door of an imposing stone building. He pulls at the bell chain. A smartly uniformed servant in blue livery opens the door and steps towards him.
Well?
If from the deep charity of your noble master's heart...
Go away, man, before he sees you.
Who is it?
No one, my lord. Just a beggar.
Well, bring him in.
The servant frog marches the beggar towards the main table. The Marquise rises.
Welcome. I'm afraid you were so late that we started without you.
With a look of confusion, the beggar proceeds to the centre of the room.
Noble lord, if from the deep charity of your good heart...
If only you'd let us know.
If you could spare a little bread.
A little earlier, a whole goose would have been yours. But now, as you see, everything's gone.
A half-finished platter is on a table nearby. The beggar puts out a hand towards it.
Not a crumb left.
Don't tease him.
Why not, my dear?
Well, he's a man, not an animal.
Oh, is he? Yes, I suppose he is. Would you like to have him, my dear? As a pet?
The beggar looks bewildered.
How much do you want for yourself? 2 pesetas? 5? 10?
10 pesetas, my lord?
Done.
The Marquise stands and pulls out a little purse. He tips some coins into his palm and flings them onto the floor near the beggar, who scampers around trying to retrieve them.
And now, he's yours, my dear. Your very own pet. What would you like him to do?
Give him some food and wine.
Excellent. Wine for our new guest.
And food.
Later. Wine.
Another uniformed servant hands the beggar a goblet and pours him some wine, which he drinks heartily. The Marquise grins as the beggar finishes his cup.
More! Hey, not in that peddling little cup. Here, fill this.
He hands the servant his own, much larger, silver goblet. The servant fills up the vessel from a silver jug. The beggar empties the goblet. The wine pours down his chin as he polishes it off. He again makes for the platter of half-finished food.
Food, I must have food.
The Marquise holds up a half-eaten chicken leg.
You must sing for it first.
I can't sing.
Dance then.
I can't dance.
Anyone can dance. Music.
The beggar looks round uncertainly.
Dance! Dance!
The beggar puts down the goblet and starts to swing his elbows and kick up his legs awkwardly.
Thank you.
He starts to enjoy himself and gets more enthusiastic with his movements. He takes a goblet off a nobleman and empties it. He throws the goblet away. He flings his cloak over his shoulder and flamboyantly stomps around the room. Then he takes the cloak off, and swinging it around, it gets wrapped around his face, and he stumbles to the ground as he tries to free himself. He sticks his head out and uncertainly looks around. He smiles and laughs. He gets to his feet and starts to spin around, holding the cloak out in front of him. He collapses onto the floor.
Please give him something to eat.
Here, dog. Here's your bone. Go on, come and get it like a good dog.
The beggar holds out his hand and crawls towards the main table. The Marquez feigns a couple of throws, then flings the chicken leg onto the floor. The nobleman gives his wife a long look.
Time for us to retire, my dear.
He stands.
My bride and I bid you good night.
Two servants quickly move back the newlyweds' chairs. The Marquez takes his wife by the hand and leads her into the centre of the room. The noblemen on each side bow to them. The beggar, finishing off the chicken leg, stands. The Marquez stops in the doorway and turns.
Thank you, senor.
The nobleman starts to lead his wife out of the room.
Have a good night.
He stops and turns to the grinning beggar.
You insolent.
Don't forget he's mine. A wedding gift for my husband. I don't want my gift to be damaged.
You're quite right, my dear. He must be looked after. You see, he's looked after.
Two servants fling the beggar into a cell. He tumbles onto the straw-covered ground. He sits up in pain.
And so the beggar was imprisoned in the castle dungeon. Time passed, and he was forgotten. The only people he ever saw were the jailer and his little girl, a serious child who could not speak.
Here, you give it to him. He's your friend.
The filthy prisoner now has longer hair and a straggly beard. A girl in an orange dress hands him a large chicken leg through the bars, which he tucks into. The girl stares at him somberly. He winks at her. She smiles. The beggar turns to the wall and sits down. The girl watches. He continues to eat with a manic look.
The years passed, and the beggar remained a prisoner, now completely forgotten by the Marquez. The old jailer died. His daughter grew up. But still, she could not speak.
The jailer's daughter, now an attractive woman, brings a bowl of meat to the bars of the cell. She has long dark hair and wears an orange dress. The beggar, curled up in a corner of the cell, rouses himself. He has long, matted grey hair and an unkempt long beard. He has hairy forearms and hands, and his clothes are ripped and torn. He approaches the cell's bars. The woman looks at him with sympathy. The beggar picks up another piece of meat and starts to eat. He grabs another meaty bone and moves back into the cell. He looks round. The woman looks at him and half smiles. Then she enters another part of the castle, a lavishly furnished bedroom with stone walls and a grand four-poster bed.
The vile temper and foul tongue of the Marquez had sent his wife to an early grave and lost him the few friends he possessed. Now he lives a recluse in his own room.
She starts to clean out the fireplace. On a table nearby is a large house of cards, behind which sits the figure of the elderly Marquez. He's staring at the beautiful woman. He collapses the house of cards.
And what's your name, my dear?
The woman looks startled as the ugly old man gets up.
Don't be frightened. Just tell me your name.
He approaches her.
Your name, my dear. Your name, your name! Ah, no, you don't. Ah, you're a lively one, aren't you? Why don't you show me just how lively you can be, eh? You come here tonight and show me, huh?
She bites his hand and flees from the room. The old man sucks the wound.
The old vixen. I'll show him.
He pulls a bell chain. He has a grey face covered in warts. He wears a light brown velvet jacket and a bandage around his head. He sits at a little dressing table and wraps a length of white fabric around his injured hand. He stands and goes to the door.
Who was that girl?
My lord?
The one that just went out, idiot.
Just a servant, my lord. Used to work below, my lord. In the dungeons.
Ah, used to work below, did she? In the dungeons, eh?
The jailer's daughter is flung into the cell.
You'll stay there until you've learned your manners. And to be a bit friendlier.
The young woman looks round, confused. She turns her head. The beggar peers round a corner of the cell at her. He looks bewildered as he steps out of the shadows. The woman puts her hand to her chest anxiously and sits up. She starts to back away as the wild and hairy man approaches. He stops and raises his arm. She rises to her feet. He seems confused at her fearful looks. She edges sideways along the bars at the front of the cell, but he moves with her, staring at her manically. She rushes towards the bars of the cell door and opens her mouth as if to scream. The man pulls her backwards onto the floor. Time passes. Then she's sitting slouched against the cell wall, her head resting against her shoulder. Her dress is ripped and she has little cuts across her chest. She glances around with a look of fear. She sits up. She stares at the ground in the center of the cell and stands slowly. She edges along the side of the wall. The beggar is lying motionless on his back, his eyes open as if he's died. The woman hangs onto the bars of the cell, opening her mouth, trying to scream. She shakes the bars. A servant enters.
Senses, have you? I thought you would.
The man pulls her out of the cell.
You know where you've got to go now, don't you?
Inside his room, the elderly Marquez is in front of a mirror, rubbing the warts on his face.
Who is it?
The jailer's daughter enters. He gets up and shuts the door. The woman carries a cast iron spike behind her back. As he approaches, she thrusts the spike into his chest. He staggers forwards and she repeatedly plunges it into his back. The Marquez slumps to the floor. The woman steps backwards and drops the spike. She struggles to open the door, then does so and rushes away. Dusk. The woman is staggering through some woodland. She reaches the banks of a lake. She leans against a tree and collapses onto the ground.
girl hid in the forest for some months, where she lived like an animal. It was here that I found her.
The body of the jailer's daughter is lying motionless face down in the water. Nearby, a townsman is strolling along the banks of the lake. He has dark, wavy hair and a moustache. He has the appearance of a wealthy man wearing a dark blue cloak, a blue jacket and grey trousers. He stops and spots the woman in the water. He strides into the lake and lifts her up. Then a woman with dark hair in a bun enters a comfortably furnished house carrying a wooden basket.
There. That didn't take long, did it, Senor?
She enters a kitchen area where the Senor is standing and deposits her basket near the stove.
This will soon put some colour back into her cheeks, poor mite. Fancy you finding her like that, eh? The angels are certainly watching over her. You should take some of this before you catch a chill, getting yourself all wet like that. Well, I suppose if you hadn't, she'd still have been lying there, instead of tucked up snug in her spare bed. I'll make some of this for you when I come down. Do you much more good than that stuff. It's a lucky thing she didn't lose her baby.
The man is about to drink, but stops.
Her baby?
In a bedroom.
Here you are, my little one. Drink this. It'll soon put you to rights. Now, don't try to squeak. Just take a sip or two of this, and you can go back to sleep again. That's a good girl. A little more.
She's holding a cup to the young woman's lips.
Good.
She puts the cup on the bedside table.
There. Now you can go right back to sleep and let my herbs soothe away your aches and pains.
The kindly faced housekeeper touches the woman on the cheek. She turns, the Senor enters.
What did you say about
the baby?
The housekeeper leads the man out of the room and closes the door.
In a few months there'll be a little baby in the house. If the good Lord spares her.
The housekeeper is again at the woman's bedside.
What's your name, my little one? Oh, come now, you needn't be shy with me. You haven't spoken a word since you've been here. Nobody's going to hurt you. Now tell me, what's your name?
The jailer's daughter, sitting up in bed, points to her mouth ruefully and shakes her head.
Oh, my poor child. You poor little thing. You poor lonely little thing.
Teresa's new interest gave me the peace I needed for my work. At least, it did at first.
Here's your nightcap, Senor.
Leave it there, Teresa.
The man is at his desk with a quill in his hand and a pipe in his mouth. Teresa puts a large glass of wine next to him.
Senor, I'm beginning to be a bit worried.
What about?
Of course you may think me superstitious.
You
may think me superstitious, but I've seen a good deal more of the world than you have. The real world, not what you read about in your old books. You know, it will soon be the 25th.
25th?
Of December. You know what that means.
Well, the 25th is always on Christmas Day.
Well, then.
Christmas Day is always on the 25th.
Of course, if you're going to make fun of me.
No, I'm not making fun of you. I don't understand. What's the matter? What's worrying you?
What worries me is that the girl upstairs is about to have her baby. And as like as not, it'll be born on the very hour of our Lord's birth.
Surely that should be a reason to rejoice.
For an unwanted child to be born then is an insult to heaven, Senor. That's what I was taught. In the village where I come from, the girls stay away from the men in March and April, just in case. Let's pray the little child is born too soon or too late. Otherwise...
Don't worry. We'll have it born exactly to suit you.
The man relights his pipe on a candle flame. Then, nighttime, the townsfolk are trudging into church. Teresa is again at the young woman's bedside. An old woman dressed in black with a grey pinafore is standing nearby. She lights three white feathers and moves them in a circular fashion over the young woman's head. Then and she gets other objects from a nearby table. She moves a monkey's hand with the same circular motion over the woman and puts it down on the pillow. She does the same with a rabbit's foot, which she puts on the other side of the pillow. She starts to fling little bunches of dried herbs and lavender around the woman. Teresa mops the perspiration from the young woman's face. The Signor is sitting reading in another room. The jailer's daughter makes a face of discomfort. Teresa turns to the elderly medicine woman, who joins her at the bedside. They look down, and the old woman nods. Teresa closes her eyes and crosses herself. The Signor is still reading. He looks up and takes the pipe out of his mouth thoughtfully. He leans back in his chair and smiles. Then he goes back to his book. He gets up and moves to the fireplace. He bends down and lifts a lit taper with which he relights his pipe. The Signor looks up and listens. Then he smiles as if he's mistaken. He looks round and blows out the taper. The old woman hands the baby, who's wrapped in a blanket, to Teresa. The smiling housekeeper presents the baby to its mother. The jailer's daughter puts out her hand towards the infant and, smiling, tries to sit up. Suddenly, with an expression of pain, the young woman collapses back onto the bed and closes her eyes. Teresa hands the baby to the old woman. She looks down at the jailer's daughter and starts to weep. She crosses herself. Then in the church, the baptism is underway.
Panem nostrum quotidianum da nobis hodie, et demite nobis debita nostra, sicut et nos demitimus debitoribus nostris, et ne nos inducas in tentationem, sed libera nos a malo. Amen.
Teresa hands the priest the child wrapped in a cream blanket. As the priest holds it over the baptismal font, the sky darkens outside.
Leo, ego te baptizo in nomine Patris.
As the priest is about to dip his hand into the font, the water inside it ripples outwards as if repelled by his fingers. Teresa crosses herself. The priest looks confused and looks down into the font. The face of a long-toothed gargoyle is reflected in the water. The Signor looks up at a monstrous carving above them. He smiles at the priest, who nods.
Leo, ego te baptizo in nomine Patris.
He crosses the child's head with the water.
Et filii. Et Spiritus Sancti. Amen.
Another townsman with a dark moustache is walking in the dusty hills. He wears a brown hat, a blue jacket, and is carrying a rifle.
Hello? What's this then?
He walks slowly towards a bush, under which is a dead goat with a blood-stained neck.
Nasty, that is. Very nasty.
He spits and moves off.
Dominique! You lost any goats?
No. Why?
There's a dead un up here with his throat torn out. Very nasty. That dog of yours been behaving itself?
Now listen. If there's a dead goat up there with its throat torn, it can't be him. It'll be a wolf.
A wolf, eh?
Yes, and you're paid by us to keep things like wolves away.
A wolf, eh?
The man turns and walks off thoughtfully. He stands over the dead goat and then moves away. In the town square, Teresa turns round and sees him.
Hello, Pippi. Where are you off to so early in the morning?
I've got to see the mayor. Got to report a dead goat.
Well, while you're about it, you better report a dead kitten.
Kitten?
Yes, I found a kitten dead in the garden this morning. Horrible state it was in. Throat torn out. Ugh. Little Leon's kitten, too. It'll break his heart when he finds out.
Yeah. I think there's been a wolf about.
Well, whatever it was, it certainly made a mess of that kitten. I didn't dare let the little fellow see it.
No. No, he can't stand the sight of blood, can he?
No.
I remember the day he came hunting with me. Nearly fainted when I shot a squirrel. Cried his little heart out. Well, I better not keep the mare waiting.
Goodbye, Peppy.
Then a young, dark-haired boy in a green jacket is coming down some steps.
Oh, there you are, Leon. Ready for your breakfast, my angel?
I'm not hungry, Aunt Teresa.
Oh, no lunch yesterday and hardly any supper last night. This won't do. Come, I've made some of my hot cakes for you. You like those, don't you?
In the mayor's office...
You seem to be falling down on your job, Peppy. You're employed as a watchman, not to loaf about all day, letting a pack of wolves come up to the town stealing our goats from under our noses.
But I've always tried...
If it hadn't been for Dominique here, the goats might never have been discovered.
But it was I who...
However, I have no wish to be unduly harsh. I'll overlook it this time. Now, get on with your job. I want those wolves dead within 24 hours and delivered to me here at the town hall. You understand?
Yes, senor. 24 hours.
Not a minute more. You may go.
Pepe gives a vexed look to the mayor and shuffles out of the room. Nighttime in the hills. Pepe turns round watchfully. He looks up at the full moon. He looks down at his rifle and cocks it. He peers through the darkness. He aims his gun ahead of him and a rabbit scampers into the undergrowth. He lets his arms drop. He turns and starts to trudge off. He turns back round with a start. Something is rustling in a nearby bush. Pepe fires into it. He runs towards it. He rushes down a bank and follows a trail of blood, ending in a red puddle. Pepe crouches down. He sticks his finger into it and rubs his finger and thumb together thoughtfully. Then Leon, the little boy, is lying on a bed being attended to by the Signor and Teresa. The man removes an object from the boy's leg and presses a bandage onto the wound. The Signor stands up, and Teresa sits at the edge of the bed with a basin and starts to clean the injury.
There, rest quietly. You'll soon be better now.
She looks up. The Signor is holding out a round lead bullet. Teresa shakes her head.
Try to sleep, my little one.
I did shoot it, I tell you. It was a young wolf. I saw it, and I shot it.
Where is it now? Disappeared into thin air, I suppose.
Yes.
Well, I lost three goats last night.
And I lost two. I can't help it if things won't die when I shoot them.
You want to get yourself a new gun, or a pair of spectacles?
Or a stick to water.
Come on, let's report this to the town hall.
The landlady approaches Pepe.
I did shoot it. I did.
He must have got up during the night. It's the only explanation. He must have got up, come downstairs, and gone out.
But if he'd come through here, I'd have heard him.
You'd be asleep.
I'd have woken up. He never came down those stairs.
You mean he climbed out of the window?
I just mean he didn't come through here.
The Signor looks down thoughtfully.
Oh. There's only one way of finding out.
He moves towards the staircase. Teresa looks down at the lead ball sorrowfully. It's lying on a table on a piece of bandage. She picks it up. She puts her dark shawl over her shoulders and moves to the door. She glances behind her and goes out.
Now, I want you to tell me everything, Leon. Promise?
I promise.
And truthfully?
Yes.
Where did you go last night?
Go, Uncle?
Yes. I know you went out. Where did you go?
I was in bed all night, Uncle.
Oh, Leon, you promised to tell me the truth.
I am telling the truth.
Then how did you get hurt?
I don't know, Uncle.
Well, you couldn't have been hurt like that in bed.
I know I was in bed, Uncle, because I woke up in the night. I had a bad dream, woke up. But then I went to sleep again.
And what did you dream?
I don't really remember, Uncle. Not very clearly. But it was like other nights.
Other nights?
I have bad dreams every night now, Uncle.
I see. Tell me, Leon, when did these dreams start?
I think it was after I went out hunting with old Peppy. He wanted to show me how to shoot. He wanted me to shoot a squirrel, but I wouldn't, so he shot it for me. He pulled the trigger, and the little squirrel squeaked and dropped. It was horrible. I picked it up and tried to kiss it better. I kissed it, and I tasted something warm. Must have been the blood, but it tasted sweet. I wanted to keep on tasting it, but Pepe took it away. I did wrong, didn't I, Uncle?
No, no, I don't think so, Leon.
Ever since then, I've had bad dreams, Uncle.
What do you dream?
I dream my morph, like in a picture book. I dream my morph drinking blood. Help me, Uncle, please help me.
Yes, I'll help you.
The man thinks. He lets go of the little boy's hand. His palm is hairy with a line of fur running up his forearm. Then a severe-looking woman puts her hand in a desk drawer and pulls out a round lead bullet. She's holding another one. She compares them as she approaches Teresa.
Yes, it's one of his, all right. Where did you find it, Teresa?
It was embedded in a tree trunk up near the pastures.
Oh, so he did miss.
I won't breathe a word about it.
Ah, thank you, Teresa. It will break his heart. And he's been so upset as it is. Now, will you have a glass of something?
No, thank you. I must go.
The woman looks again at the two lead balls. Then the signor is standing in front of the priest in the vestry.
There are elemental spirits about us at all times, my son. Spirits without bodies of creatures that have never lived. And some say it is to prevent the invasion of these roaming spirits into the highest creation of God's sculpturing hands, the body of man, before whom all beasts must kneel. And some say it is to prevent this invasion that man's body stiffens into rigor mortis at the moment of his death. A roaming spirit entering the body then finds only a dry, unwelcoming shell.
But, Father...
Now, you're wondering what this has to do with little Leon.
Yes.
I'll tell you, my son. Sometimes it so happens that the spirit of one of these beasts finds entrance into a body while it yet lives, usually at the moment of birth. Then the soul and the spirit war with each other to gain mastery of the body. But if the soul of the man is strong and clean, it will generally exorcise the spirit of the beast before it is many years old. But if for some reason the soul is weak, an inherited weakness, an accident of birth, then...
With a look of concern, Signor Corlido sits down on a little seat.
I see. A werewolf.
For that is what he is, my son. A werewolf is a body with a soul and a spirit that are constantly at war. The spirit is that of a wolf. And whatever weakens the human soul, vice, greed, hatred, solitude, especially during the cycle of the full moon when the forces of evil are at their strongest, these bring the spirit of the wolf to the fore, and in turn whatever weakens the spirit of the beast. Warmth, fellowship, love. Raise the human soul. Now, little Leon has no real father or mother, and yet he needs their love and care far more than any normal child.
I understand, Father. And I shall do my best to replace that love.
I know you will, my son.
But is there no cure?
Only love. When he's older, he may meet a young girl whom he will love very deeply. But what is more important, she should love him very deeply. Then he may be saved.
It was no ordinary wolf, gentlemen. No ordinary wolf would tear out the throat and drain blood. Every last drop.
Well, if it wasn't a wolf, what was it?
Last night was the night of the full moon. And you know what that means.
What?
Here. Who's going to pay for all these drinks?
Give it to him.
It means that things are abroad.
Things? What sort of things?
Strange things that should not be spoken of.
The man at the bar drains his glass.
Good day, senor. Senora.
The drunk man in a green cape staggers away.
Well, whatever it is out there, my husband will get rid of it, won't you, my dear?
Pepe picks up his gun.
Just gonna give this a clean.
The landlady watches as Pepe leaves. He takes a bottle of wine with him as he goes. Then Signor Corlido is banging a large nail into a window frame with a mallet. The window is now covered in thick steel bars. He puts down the hammer and grips the bars.
Ah. That should keep your nightmares away.
Yes, Uncle.
Then in the town's restaurant...
I have a wolf steak and potato.
The landlady storms off.
Now listen, all of you. I've had just about enough of this. If any one of you makes another insulting remark about my good husband, he goes out of that door.
I hit that animal. Fair and square. Must be dead.
Pepe stops pacing and looks at a silver crucifix on the wall. Then there is a pot on a stove. Pepe pours a small ladle of the molten liquid within it into a bullet mold. He shakes the mold and blows it. Then he tips the round bullet out of the mold and onto a piece of leather that he's holding. The bullet is silver. He uses the mold clippers to chop a little wastage off it. Then he turns and files the bullet down.
You might have lent my hand.
The lady puts down a vase of flowers and looks up at the wall.
What's happened to my crucifix?
Pepe nods at the pot on the stove. With a look of bewilderment, the lady peers into the pot.
I had to do it. It was the only way.
But that crucifix was blessed by the Archbishop himself.
Pepe turns and carries on filing.
So much the better, mind you.
Nighttime. Pepe is back in the hills watching over the small group of goats. He sits on a rocky ledge above them, holding his rifle. A full moon appears from behind a dark cloud. Pepe pulls the silver bullet from his jacket pocket and crosses himself. He puts it into the end of his rifle. The goats are startled by the noise and become restless. A dog trots over a mound nearby. Pepe gets up and rushes down the dusty bank towards the goats. He reaches the mound and fires. Carlito enters Leon's bedroom. The boy is at the window tugging on the bars.
Leon! Leon!
The man grips the little boy's arms. The child goes limp. His open mouth reveals he has two long fangs. The signor carries him over to his bed. The man tucks him in as the little child watches him. Don Carlito strokes the little boy's forehead. The child shuts his eyes.
So it was you all the time.
A dog lies panting at Pepe's feet, a bullet wound in its neck.
Leon grew into a fine lad, and the care and affection that Therese and I gave him seemed to cure him completely of his terrible sickness.
Now, if you don't like the place, you come straight back. Promise.
I promise.
Why you can't stay here and work with your father, I don't know.
Now, Therese, it's only natural he should want to make his own way in the world. I admire him for it.
Thank you, Father.
Oh, but working in a vineyard.
Oh, Therese.
Goodbye, Father.
Goodbye, my boy.
Oh, your money. Have you got your money safe?
It's here, Aunt Teresa.
Leon gives the elderly housekeeper a long embrace. The signor hands him a couple of bags and pats him on the back as he walks away. He jumps down some steps, turns and waves at a passerby, and hurries off. Don Carlito and Teresa wave at him. They turn to each other.
Well, Teresa?
We must thank God, signor. He's given Leon back to us.
Leon marches across the square. Then he's striding along an overgrown riverbank. He jumps over a little brook. He heads down a dusty hill. He wears a three-quarter-length brown jacket, a frilly shirt and brown trousers. He has dark hair and a handsome face. He's smiling to himself. He stops at the entrance to a collection of buildings. Written on the wall is Gomez Bodega. Leon picks up his bags. A horse and carriage comes out of the gateway. Leon is splashed with mud. He flings the bags to the ground as the man in the carriage laughs. Leon shrugs and bends down to brush off the mud. A man approaches him in a grey shirt and red trousers.
Who are you?
Oh, I'm Leon Carlito.
Senor.
Senor.
Are you strong?
Oh, yes.
You look strong. Do you like work?
Yes, when I'm paid for it, senor.
You better come in.
Leon follows the man through the gateway into a courtyard. The man walks with a limp. They go into a room with stone steps leading down from the door. A young man is standing over a table of wine bottles.
This is where you'll work. The hours are 7 to 10 with a half-hour for lunch. The pay is 6 pesetas. You sleep in there. Jose here will tell you what to do.
The man leaves. Leon bounds down the steps.
My name's Leon.
You heard, man, already. Jose. Welcome.
He said you'd tell me what I had to do.
Oh, it's easy.
He moves to some barrels.
There's wine, you see. Red in there, white in there. There's the bottles, and there's the labels. You put the wine inside, you put the labels outside.
Then the carriage, being pulled by two black horses, comes through the gateway. It circles the courtyard and stops at a doorway where the man in the red trousers is standing. Leon and Jose are watching from a window nearby.
Who's that?
Well, the old misery is Don Fernando, but you know that already, don't you? The young misery is young Gomez. His father owns this place. And the pretty one, the one you really want to know about, that's Fernando's daughter. And stop you asking your next question. They're engaged. And that makes Teddy Fernando very happy.
Does it make her happy?
Well, what do you think? I mean, just look at him.
Gomez climbs into the carriage with a haughty air. He gives a cursory wave. Don Fernando is waving back.
Wait, wait.
The young woman does so half-heartedly.
Really, Christina, I think you might try and be a little more gracious to your future husband.
The man goes inside. Christina is about to pick up a basket. She stops and looks ahead of her. She walks forward.
She's coming this way.
Well, it's not to see you, so don't get yourself excited.
The men return to their wine-bottling tables. The young woman with dark hair, a blue dress, and a dark cloak comes down the stairs.
I've come to apologize, Signor.
Apologize?
It was you we splashed, wasn't it? With the carriage.
There's no need for you to apologize, Signorita.
If I don't, I'm sure no one else will. My name is Cristina Fernando.
Signorita.
And you?
Leon. Leon Corrido. I've just started work here.
Oh, I know. I hope you'll be happy here.
Thank you. I'm sure I shall.
Cristina nods at Leon and his colleague and heads up the stairs. Jose, a portly young man with dark wavy hair, turns to Leon.
Yes, I'm sure you will too.
Dusk. The carriage is moving along a country road. Gomez and Cristina are in the back of it.
It's very unfair. This is the third evening running. We've had a headache and we've had to come home early.
I can't help having headaches, Rico.
No, but it's beastly inconvenient all the same. And I was winning too. 100% as I stood to win if my luck... No, it's not the money.
What is it then?
Well, it's very unfair. That's what it is.
Cristina gives him a weary look. Then Jose is sitting in his nightshirt, cutting out shapes in paper.
Hey!
He unfolds the paper. Leon is sitting reading.
Look!
He's cut out images of women carrying jars above their heads. He makes their silhouettes dance in the candlelight. Leon shakes his head.
Oh, well. Wish you were real, darling.
He kisses the paper, scrunches it up, and throws it down.
In the absence of anything better to do, I'm for bed. Look, don't wear your eyes out. And don't use up all that candle. I've got better things to spend my money on.
He draws a dividing curtain.
Hey, talking about money, you know what tomorrow is, don't you?
It's Saturday! We must celebrate.
Celebrate?
It's payday. Music and dancing. Don't forget that candle.
Leon grins. He thinks to himself and blows out the candle. He puts the book down and stands up. The carriage is returning into the courtyard. It turns round and stops in front of the doorway. Leon skips up to his little window to watch.
Good night, Rico. Thank you.
Good night.
The carriage moves off. Cristina stands in the moonlight and watches it go.
Is that you, Cristina?
Yes, Papa.
You're back early. Enjoy yourself.
Yes, Papa.
Good. Straight to bed now.
Yes, Papa.
Don Fernando returns inside from a balcony above her. Cristina trudges towards the entrance and goes into the building. Then she creeps out of the house through a different gate. She skips across the courtyard and embraces Leon, who's standing in front of her. They kiss and head into an outbuilding. Leon picks her up and hugs her.
Oh, I thought you were never coming.
I thought I'd never get here.
They kiss passionately on the lips. Then they hug. Cristina is thoughtful.
This is just a dream.
Oh, no, this is real, Cristina.
What if my father finds out?
Come away with me, Cristina.
Oh, it was only as simple as that.
I love you.
Oh, Leon.
I want you to marry me.
I can't. You know that.
She turns and steps away.
It has all been arranged for me. I'm to marry Rico Gomez.
Marry me, Cristina.
Oh, my father would never let me.
Let me speak to your father.
Oh, you mustn't. Promise me you won't. He'd send you away. We'd never see each other again. He'd see to that.
Anybody there?
Don Fernando is at the balcony.
You must have heard us.
Tomorrow.
Oh, come tomorrow.
Sunday then.
Sunday.
Cristina kisses him and leaves. Her father steps back into his house. Cristina rushes up to the front door, opens it, and heads inside. Leon looks up at the balcony. The light in the room behind it goes out. Then he's lying on his bed. Jose is tying a necktie.
I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my whole life. Staying in on your own on Saturday night. Pay night. It's unthinkable. In fact, come to think of it, it's downright immoral.
All right. I give in.
Now that's better.
Where do we go?
Oh. Do you like good food? Wine? Fine music? Wonderful dancing? And, beautiful girl? Well, there's this place I know just outside town. It's quiet, mind, but respectable.
A large hall, inside which roulette is being played. Tables and chairs surround a space where a group of young women in traditional Spanish dress are flamenco dancing. Jose joins them with a playful expression as he flamboyantly attempts to dance. Leon is sitting at a table with a sullen look. A red-haired woman watches him from another table and nods to herself. Jose and two of the women continue to dance. Outside, the full moon is shining in the night sky. Leon continues staring into space. A woman sits next to him with long blonde hair. She speaks to another lady. The blonde woman offers Leon a drink, but he knocks her hand and spills it.
You all right? What's the matter, dear? You're not feeling very well. Why don't you get some fresh air? Go out on the terrace.
As Leon staggers between the tables, the red-haired woman watches him intently. He walks up a few steps, then opens the door onto the balcony. He shuts the door and leans against it for a moment. He peers over the side of a low wall and stares up at the moon with a wild and savage glare. The red-haired woman steps onto the balcony.
Wishing on the moon. Did I make you jump? Sorry. Anyway, it's a new moon you wish on, isn't it?
What?
You are slow, aren't you?
She stands in front of him.
Don't you feel very well?
No. No, I don't.
What you need is a little lie down. You can come up to my room if you like. Don't worry about her in there. We can slip up the back way.
She leads Leon up some stairs off the side of the balcony. Back inside, two of the women are spinning round on the dance floor. They finish dancing. A dark-haired dancer leads Jose back to his seat next to the blonde-haired woman.
Well, he's gone for some fresh air. Ah, doesn't he look pretty? Charming.
The dark-haired woman plonks herself down next to Jose.
Waiter, more wine!
You don't care what you spend, do you?
Money is no object, my dear.
Bravo!
Then, in a little bedroom, the red-haired woman is looking at Leon in a mirror. He's lying on a bed.
This will make you feel better.
She sits on the edge of the bed and mops his face with a cloth. Leon is staring out of the window at the moon.
Not very talkative, are you, dear? Still, I like a man who doesn't chatter. I get enough of that from the other girls. Here. Why don't I make you more comfortable?
She loosens his tie.
There. That's better, isn't it? What's the matter, dear? Worrying about your girlfriend downstairs. She won't miss you, dear.
She gently touches his face.
Not for just a few minutes.
He suddenly stares at her wildly.
You're all right, dear.
He grabs her shoulders and lays her on the bed. He kisses her on the lips. Then on her cheek and neck. The woman smiles. They kiss again. Then he starts to kiss the base of her neck. She sits up. She has a bite mark under her left shoulder.
Here. What's the idea?
She looks in the mirror.
That's what you came for. You came to the wrong place.
have a good mind.
A hairy hand is tight around her neck. Her head slumps back, knocking over the mirror. Meanwhile, Jose is pouring wine into the mouth of the dark-haired woman.
How much longer does your friend expect me to sit here by myself?
I shall personally supervise his immediate return, madam.
The dark-haired woman falls off his lap.
Don't speak to any strange
men. Jose gets up and staggers away. The dark-haired woman sits on his seat.
Really?
In the bedroom, blood covers the smashed glass of the mirror on the floor. The red-haired woman is slumped over a chair, drenched in blood.
Leon.
Jose staggers onto the balcony.
Leon, where are you, my little friend?
He trips over and collapses to the floor drunkenly. As he starts to get up, a dark shadow moves across his face.
Leo?
A hairy hand grips him by the throat. Jose is lifted to his feet by his neck. In the shadows, the figure throttles Jose, lifting him above its head and flinging him off the balcony. He lies motionless on the ground.
Every night for the past 13 years you've been on about that dog of yours. Now keep quiet about it. I've had enough.
The best dog I ever had. You had to shoot him.
Yes, I had to shoot him. He was a killer, that's why.
He keeps the bullet round his neck to remind him. Round his neck.
I keep the bullet round my neck because it's made of real silver.
You're the best dog I ever had.
Go home.
In the town, Dominique, the elderly goat herder, trudges down the deserted street away from the bar. He starts to walk more slowly, frowning to himself. He stops and shrugs his shoulders. He looks round and heads off again. Something is moving along the ledge of a tower above him. The old man walks up some steps and stops. He's now looking around nervously. He climbs some more steps. Suddenly, a figure leaps on him from a nearby low roof. Don Corlido comes down the main staircase of his house carrying his jacket. He puts his jacket over the banister, climbs a few steps and opens a door. Inside the room, Leon is lying in a bed, he's bare-chested and feverish.
Leon! 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 In God's name, what happened?
Leon comes to and looks around.
Your clothes, you can't.
Don Corlido moves round the bed and stops. He walks over to the window. Its iron bars have been ripped apart. Leon sits up frowning. He starts to cry and he lifts up his hands to his face. But he stops and stares at his palms, which have blood on them. Don Corlido makes a sign of the cross and supports himself on a table.
No, no, no!
It's the truth, my son.
I won't believe it. I can't.
Leon, I must ask you once again, can you remember anything you did? No. Or where you went to last night?
No.
But try, please, try.
I can't, I tell you! I can't remember anything.
He sits at a table, comforted by Teresa.
The blood. There's blood on my hands. Where did I get blood on my hand?
That's what I'm trying to find out. Perhaps it's the blood of some animal. A sheep, maybe.
You mean I killed it with...
His head slumps onto his hands.
There, there.
Don Corlido turns away. Leon looks up at the elderly priest.
You knew about this all the time, Father.
He nods.
But you didn't tell anyone. Thank you. What am I going to do? Tell me what am I going to do, Father?
I think I can obtain permission for you to enter a monastery under special supervision, but until then you must be chained and watched night and day.
Oh, yes, that's right, isn't it? They chain up wild animals. That's all I am, an animal!
Leon gets up and rushes out of the door. He runs down the front steps and away from the house. He jogs down a dusty hill, writhing and swaying with distress. He falls to the ground and punches the dirt. He staggers on, grimacing as he goes. Then he runs into the bodega courtyard. He stops and tries to retreat.
Hey, you!
A man in traditional military uniform approaches. He wears a blue jacket and cape, white trousers and a black hat. He carries a sword on his belt. He turns round.
Sargento!
Why, that's him.
Another of the military men crosses to Leon as Don Fernando looks on.
Are you Leon Carrido?
Yes.
A friend of Jose Amadeo?
Yes.
I understand you were both at a certain establishment last night. Owned by a Senora Zumara.
Yes.
According to a Senorita Yvonne, you left early. Is that right?
Yes, yes, I think so.
You think so?
Well, I had a lot to drink.
Where did you go then, Senor Carrido?
Home.
Home? Are you sure?
Yes, I just left there.
You just left there. I see.
Why? Why are you asking me these questions?
Just making some inquiries. Good day, senor.
Good day.
Senor?
The soldiers leave.
Well, I hope you feel ashamed of yourself.
Senor.
Going to a place like that, getting drunk, disgusting.
Don Fernando.
Leon approaches him.
Tell me, has anything happened to yourself?
I neither know nor care. He's probably in jail. You're very fortunate that you're not there with him.
Leon stares at the ground and shakes his head. Nighttime. The full moon is out. Leon is gripping onto the bars of the little window in the wine bottling room.
Help me!
Leon!
Get away! Get away!
Leon!
Get away!
Leon! What?
No! Get away!
Leon tries to flee up the stairs and trips. He gets to his feet but tumbles to the ground. Daylight. Christina is perched on the edge of Leon's bunk. Leon's head is resting in her lap. He's trembling feverishly.
Leon.
Huh?
Leon, I must go before Father finds out I've been with you all night.
All night? All night.
He sits up.
Careful.
You've been here with me all night?
Yes.
He grabs her and stares at her.
Tell me, I must know. Did anything happen to me?
You hurt your leg. You were frightened and screaming.
No, no! No. Did I change? My face changed.
He covers his face with his hands.
My hands? Did anything happen?
No, Leo.
God, thank you for sending her to me.
They embrace.
We must go away now, today. You must marry me and we must go away.
Leo.
We'll start a new life. A wonderful life, Christina. We'll be together every minute of the day and night.
Tell me, what's wrong?
Christina, do you love me?
She nods.
Will you marry me, Christina? You say you love me, will you marry me?
Yes. Yes, I will.
He kisses her.
My darling, this is terribly important. But you must trust me till I have time to explain better. We must go away now, today. Please don't ask any more questions. Will you come?
Yes. Yes, I'll come with you.
They stand and kiss passionately. Then they break off and Christina leaves, smiling. Leon watches her go. Later, he's doing up his necktie in his quarters. He grabs his bag and jacket and strides up the stairs to the door. He looks up to see the two soldiers staring down at him through the bars in the door. He slowly opens the latch.
Are these your clothes, senor?
Yes.
Leon Carrido, I must ask you to accompany me.
But why?
I am arresting you on a charge of murder.
Then Leon standing in a cell, a man is sitting on the other side of the bars in a big coat.
In God's name, listen to me, will you? You must send for my father. You must, don't you understand? You must!
An old man is in the cell with him.
Listen to me, I tell you, listen!
My boy, there's only one thing he'll listen to.
Look, I'll pay you. I'm willing to pay you.
The portly guard in the big blue coat looks round at Leon and approaches the bars of the cell.
What do you want, senor? I want you to send somebody to fetch my father, Senor Don Alfredo Corrido.
How can I possibly leave here?
There must be somebody you can send.
Well, there is.
Send somebody to tell him I'm here. I need him. Senor Don Alfredo Corrido. He lives at the other side of the square, the big house at the top of the steps. Well, would you wait?
Leon passes a small purse through the bars.
Here, hurry, please.
Meanwhile, Christina skips out of her house. She's dressed all in black with a red belt carrying a wicker basket. At the gate, she glances round and rushes across the courtyard. Again, she looks round. Then she stands at the top of the steps into the wine bottling room.
Doing? And where were you going?
Don Fernando and Gomez enter.
Come on, where were you going? You were going with him, weren't you? You were going to run away with him, weren't you?
Oh, I say.
You were, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Oh.
And I still am.
Ungrateful little...
Where is he, Father? Please, where is he?
He's right where he deserves to be.
Where is he? I must go to him, Father. He needs me.
Need you? I'll bet he does, the Debocciong.
Will you please tell me where he is?
He's in jail. That's where he is.
Prison?
Yes, prison.
Why? What for? What do they say he's done?
I'm not interested in what he's done. I just know they've taken him away. And good riddance.
Rico, will you please take me to him?
What?
I want you to take me to the town.
I shall do no such thing.
Well, then, will you lend me your carriage?
What's that?
Certainly not.
I'll have to take it!
Christina! Come back here at once!
She rushes up to the carriage driver.
Come back!
You are to drive me to the town. It's an order from Senor Gomez. And hurry, please!
Christina! Come back!
The carriage moves off. Don Colido and the priest are standing outside Leon's cell.
I've already killed three people, Father. Can't you understand this? Strangled them with my hands. Savage them with my teeth. That has yet to be proved. Proof. They'll prove it all right because it's true. And if they make me stay here tonight, it's going to happen all over again.
He glances at the bars.
No. Don't think these are going to stop me.
What can we do? We must go to the mayor.
Appeal to him.
No, not appeal. Tell him. Tell him what I am. Tell him I've confessed to everything.
What?
Tell him I've confessed. That he must have me executed. Now.
My son.
Yes, now. Before sunset. And Father, you must tell him how it must be done.
The priest looks down thoughtfully.
Burned alive. No, this is too much. It's preposterous. It's too much to expect me to believe.
Nevertheless, it is true.
How long have you known of this, Father?
Since he was a child.
And you did nothing about it?
I wasn't certain.
Then why are you certain now, eh? Why?
You have only to ask my son, and he will tell you.
Your son, a murderer?
Yes.
What is it you want me to do then?
Please, hand the boy over to me so that I may take him to a monastery where he'll be looked after.
No, that's impossible. No, the boy will have to stand trial.
If he is kept in this town until after sunset, he can't be responsible for his actions.
What do you mean?
I mean that he will break out of prison and kill. Kill wantonly and savagely. Like an animal. And you. You will be responsible.
The guard leads the mayor, the priest, and Don Corlido towards the cell.
There he is, senor. That's the one.
The mayor, with a moustache and goatee beard, approaches the bars.
You there. Stand up. Let me look at you.
Leon gets up very slowly.
Let me see your hands.
Leon raises his arms and displays his hands.
Now your teeth. Open your mouth. Come on, come on.
Leon shows his teeth, which are normal human teeth.
Senor, I beseech you. Don't make me stay.
Christina's carriage heads into the main square. The driver stops the carriage and Christina jumps out and rushes into a building. The mayor steps away from the cell.
I shall require other witnesses.
Well, there's Teresa.
Teresa?
Yes, my servant.
Your servant? Oh, I'm afraid I cannot.
Let me in!
Christina!
Silence!
You must let her in. She can help me. She's the only one.
The mayor nods to the guard, who unlocks a door.
Senorita!
What are they doing to you?
Help me, Christina.
Who is this?
Christina turns to the mayor.
Who are you?
I'm Christina Fernando, signor.
You know the prisoner?
Yes, signor.
Well?
We are engaged to be married, signor.
Oh, you are engaged to be married, are you? Say you know all about him.
Signor?
You know all about his affliction.
Affliction?
So far as you know, this is a perfectly normal young man.
Yes.
Thank you.
Leon bows his head.
The prisoner will remain here and stand trial. Gentlemen.
The priest approaches Christina.
Come, my child.
Leave her with me. For God's sake, have pity. Leave her.
Come. Come. Please, my child. Come.
What are they doing? What's happening?
Father, the bullet. Pepe the watchman has a silver bullet. Get it and use it. Use it on me, Father! You must use it, do you hear? You must use it, you must!
Don Corlido looks back at the young man, then heads up the steps and out of the jail. With a look of anguish, Leon retreats slowly back from the bars of the cell and slumps down onto the end of the bunk. Christina and the priest are in the church.
I don't believe you.
But you must, my child. It's the truth.
It's not true. It's not true.
The priest gets up slowly and puts a reassuring hand on her shoulder. Christina looks up at him.
Please tell me it's not true.
Then Don Corlido is up in the hills. He stands at the top of a mound and surveys his surroundings. Dusk. In his cell, Leon looks round at the red sky out of the little barred window with concern. His elderly cellmate looks round too.
It's getting dark.
Leon turns slowly round with a somber look. Frowning, he stares at the palms of his hands. He clenches his fists. Don Corlido is still rushing around the countryside. A man is reclining on a bank behind him.
Hey.
In the cell.
It's a beautiful evening. The moon is just rising. A full moon. It will soon be as bright as day.
The old man turns round. Leon looks down at his swollen hands. His palms slowly cover in dark hair. Leon stares at them with a wild look. His cellmate looks anxious. Leon gets up and kicks at something. He pulls off his necktie. He starts to tear at his shirt and rushes madly towards the cell bars. He rips more of his shirt and turns. He grips the wooden bunk bed. The old man cowers against the wall, staring anxiously at the back of his head. Leon turns. His brow has become heavier. His face is changing. Then at Don Corlido's residence, Teresa goes to the door.
Ah, Teresa. This young lady has nowhere to stay. She's a friend of Leon's, and I thought perhaps...
Oh, come in, my dear.
Well, I must go back to the church. I'll come here after service.
My dear, you're shaking. Come and sit by the fire, and I'll get you a warm drink.
Teresa helps the weary Christina into a chair. The young woman stares into the fire. Leon has become a werewolf with red, hungry eyes. He has grey fur around his head, cheeks and chin. He steps up to the old man. The guard enters the jail. He rushes up to the bars of the cell. Leon turns with a blood-covered mouth. Leon rushes at the bars and breaks down the door. He flings the door on top of the guard. The werewolf then pulls the door off the guard and sends it crashing into a chair. He stands over the man.
This will soon put some colour into your cheeks.
The housekeeper brings over a tray. She loosens the shawl around Christina's neck.
I can't think where Don Alfredo has got to.
She hands Christina a bowl.
There was something about a silver bullet.
Teresa turns with a look of concern.
Pepe's silver bullet. So it's come to that at last. Come to what? What is this bullet? A silver bullet. Made from a crucifix. The only bullet that will kill a werewolf.
Christina's shocked. Meanwhile, many townsfolk are gathered in the main square. Don Corlido approaches the mayor.
What is it? What happened?
What you said.
Where is he?
I don't know, senor.
Your hands up on the roof!
Leon, as the werewolf, is standing on a ledge surrounding a tower. The mob point at him and head towards the building. Some carry flaming torches. Christina comes down the steps at the front of Don Corlido's house. She appears confused and anxious. She rushes into the town. Leon is heading along the ledge towards a roof. Below him, Christina comes down some more steps. She looks round. Leon watches her a moment, then moves away. The crowd now group around the young woman. Don Corlido approaches her.
Did you see anything?
No, what happened?
The werewolf peers down from the ledge at the crowd and moves away. The mob rushes after it along the street. Leon jumps down onto a balcony. He clambers over the balcony and jumps down into the street. He tries to flee down one alley, but the mob cut him off. He retreats towards another passageway, but again it's blocked by a crowd. As Don Corlido and Christina watch, he jumps up onto the roof of his father's house. He clambers up the side of a wall over a Gothic archway set in relief against it. Christina looks away as the werewolf climbs up onto the ramparts on top of the house. The crowd are all pointing upwards.
Surround the house! Just burn it! That's it, burn it!
The werewolf snarls down from the roof as Don Corlido, Christina and Teresa watch him from within the crowd below. Leon climbs off the roof and onto another ledge. He jumps off the ledge and slides down a stone buttress. He stands on top of the wall, swaying. The crowd moves back. The werewolf climbs onto another roof, then onto a ledge around another tower. The mob rush round into the square below it, pointing and waving their fists. Leon retreats into a little wooden hut, outside which are hay bales. One of the townsmen flings his flaming torch up onto one of the hay bales. It catches a light. The werewolf picks up the burning bale and throws it down into the crowd, which scatters. The werewolf jumps off the roof and into the street. He starts to climb up another wall. The crowd point at him. Teresa, Christina and Don Colido watch with concern as Leon climbs towards the top of the town's bell tower.
You stay here.
Don Colido moves through the crowd and heads towards the church carrying his gun. He rushes inside. Leon loses his footing and hangs off one of the ledges. He clambers slowly up into the shadowy bell room. Colido goes up some steps, at the top of which is a thin iron ladder attached to the wall, which he starts to climb. One of the townsmen moves away from the crowd. The man rushes into the church. The werewolf snarls at the crowd below. The bells start to ring behind the creature. The wolfman staggers around in anguish. Don Colido is still climbing the ladder. The werewolf is backed into a corner by the sound of the swinging bells. Don Colido enters the bell room and watches the grimacing wolfman. He holds up his rifle. The werewolf stares at him. Don Colido aims his rifle. The wolf grabs the bell and he's about to leap towards him. The Don shoots him through the heart. The werewolf is thrown to the ground. The crowd rush into the church. Don Colido holds onto the bells to stop them ringing. He moves over to the werewolf's body and turns him over. Don Colido looks down at him and slowly takes off his cape. The werewolf's eyes are open and his mouth is covered in blood. The old man lays the cape over the beast. Teresa and Christina cling to each other in the square below. The end.